When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So we're at the halfway stage of the 2022 Australian Open, not in terms of days, but I think sort of philosophically we consider end of round three, precipice of round four as the halfway stage of any Grand Slam. And that is where we find ourselves. Our last 16 lineups in the singles are completed. We've all just watched Marin Cilic unexpectedly roll back the years and kill the movement, David. I didn't think of all the movement killers out there. I didn't think Marin Cilic had it in him, quite honestly. And he's really shown us something. I can't claim to have watched every Marin Cilic match that he's ever played, but that's as pumped as I've seen him. Pumped tonight.
I agree. I think he was feeling euphoric. Partly because he probably has felt over the last 12 months, like you've just said, that probably that's gone now, that sort of match, that sort of win, that sort of stage might not happen anymore. I do think there were some flickers last year. He started to play well in the last few months of the year. And although he had some really tough losses in the Davis Cup, he actually played really good tennis at times. He just was playing against really good players. And in the previous round, I can't remember who he beat in the previous round, but there were those wonderful scenes where he was celebrating with the Croatian fans, who they often come out in force, and he just got the sense that he was making the most of the time that he's got left in his career. I mean, he's getting on a bit now, but he doesn't look old. He still looks physically quite well. He still looks fit. He still looks as though he doesn't get injured that easily. But He looks
the same as he has for the last decade.
Yeah, he does. It seems like there is still something left in the tank. The biggest concern he had, and what was very interesting, I didn't see the first two sets, but Miles McLagan and Simon Reid, who I love listening to in commentary, they just quietly assessed his performance and just said he's not allowing himself to get nervous in rallies because he's not involving himself in rallies. He's just teeing off on second serves from Rublev, and Rublev is hating it. And the only time he got vulnerable was when he went up a break in the third set, Cilic, and then suddenly he's got it all to lose for the first time in the night. And I think we all feared for him at that point, and he lost the set. He lost four games in a row in a blink of an eye, but he got himself together again.
Yeah, suddenly there were an extra few ticks added to his service routine at that point in the match, and we were all really fearing for him. But Andre Rublev doesn't have another gear, does he? He doesn't have anything to go to, doesn't, I mean, I know it's almost a cliche now, isn't it, with Andre Rublev saying he's got a great plan A, but he doesn't have a plan B. And I think knowing that for somebody with the experience of Marin Cilic, knowing that, look, if I can just find my game again, that's enough. I know that's enough. He's not going to throw anything different at me. That must be quite a sort of reassuring place to be, especially for someone of Marin Cilic's experience. And that's probably, Matt, the biggest upset of the day today, Marin Cilic against Andre Rublev, the fifth seed. There was some silly talk on Twitter about whether Marin Cilic is in the mix, and I'd like to dampen that down right away, because there is nobody out there, even now after beating Rublev, that wouldn't be surprised if Marin Cilic won this title. I know he's reached the final before. I know he's a Grand Slam champion. I don't care. Everyone would be surprised and he's not in the mix.
Correct. Official ruling, not in the mix. Move on.
These people don't understand the mix. That's the truth. I mean, look.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really either, but we know for sure that Marin Cilic is not in it.
Yeah. I mean, look, his tennis, if he plays like he did tonight every step of the way, he can be. He can give anybody a good match. That is what I would say. I mean, I just don't see how he would outlast a Medvedev, for instance. And I think probably Zverev would be too good at the same thing that he's trying to do to beat him as well. But I just you can't expect Marin Cilic to be able to keep that level up all the way through. I think that's why he wouldn't be for me. But his next opponent, I think he's got a real chance against.
Felix Auger-Aliassime, you do?
Why do you think that, David? Well,
You watched Felix Auger-Aliassime just pummel Dan Evans today, and a lot of people thought that match would be close.
I did see that, Catherine, but the thing is, I think that was a lot closer than it looks. It was 6-4, 6-1, 6-1, which
Dan Evans doesn't.
It sounds horrendously one-sided, but if you actually take the first two sets in isolation, they both had three break points in the first two sets. It's just that Evans took 0 out of 3 and Auger-Aliassime took 3 out of 3. And in the first set, it was 5-4 when Felix broke. And until that point, I think Evans had been probably the better player. He'd been knocking on the door. It looked like his backhand slice was starting to make Auger-Aliassime miss more than score. And then instead of breaking Felix when he had the chance, he got broken at 5-4. So he'd had his chances. They went awry. He had two break points to one of Auger-Aliassime's in the first set. And then even the second set, he went 3-love down, and yet he still was in all those games. There were juice games, all that sort of thing. And then suddenly it was like Evans just went. And I also think Felix is a really good front runner. Once he gets confident and he's on the roll, and then suddenly he just rolled him comfortably. But it was I'm still not convinced by Auger-Aliassime. I think he is beatable by people that probably shouldn't beat him.
Mm. Well, a great front runner is actually exactly how Dan Evans described him today. And you've given a more charitable assessment of Evans' performance than he gave his own performance. But he agreed with you about how crucial those break points in the first set was. He said, I panicked after I didn't take those break points. And I think he put down that sort of lack of composure. He put it down to the walkover that he got in the second round. On reflection, and that's the first time he said he's ever had a walkover in a slam, that was not a good thing. He said at the time he thought, oh, great, brilliant. But it turned out to be really not a good thing. He said he was flummoxed by it, lost momentum, had too much time to think about the match today. He also said he wishes he'd taken the opportunity to check out the court that he was playing on today. He was really sort of flummoxed again by his surroundings. He was irritable with everything. It was the John Cain Arena, David, which we discussed yesterday on the pod. And it's different to everywhere else at Melbourne Park.
There was also a concert going on outside.
There was, although
that was
Dan Evans says that was the highlight of the match. He said hearing
he didn't sound
Elton
like
John's,
it at the time.
Yeah, well, afterwards he said hearing Rocket Man was the highlight of his afternoon.
He was getting really wound up about that in the first set. And I did think about that, you know, that I can't ever remember him having had a walkover in a Grand Slam. And the pace of these things, he's a fidgety guy. He likes to be doing stuff all the time. He's not, you know, I don't think that would have sat well with him thinking about it. And, they constantly looked on the edge of his nerves out there.
So we've got Cilic trying to pull off another movement killing in the next round against Felix Auger-Aliassime. It's quite a movement-y half of the draw, actually, isn't it? Because we've got Alex de Minaur against Jannik Sinner as a fourth rounder. Alex de Minaur beat Pablo Andujar pretty handily on the Rod Laver Arena tonight. He was very touched by the fact that he was playing not only on the Rod Laver Arena in prime time, of course, Saturday night in Australia, but also in front of Rod Laver himself. That really meant a lot to him. And there was also quite a lot of adorable dog chat in the post-match interview.
And videos. Enzo the dog.
It was all lovely.
It's Dimino's dog, is it?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Oh, right.
A golden retriever called Enzo. We love Enzo. I've also written in the agenda here something to do with a nipple, which I need Matt to explain.
Yes, after they showed the picture of his dog, they showed a very close-up video of his nipple, because that's where he's got his Davis Cup number tattooed, all of our previous backers when they didn't give their full name when they were anonymous. And Jim Courier asked him about, you know, what the number 109 and representing Australia, being part of the Davis Cup team, means to him, and... in short, a lot.
Yeah, I've got it literally burned into my skin. That's how much it means to me.
Him and Sinner is a match I really like the sound of.
Me too, David. I said that to Catherine and got a bit of a blank response.
I find Yannick Sinner a little bit of a vibe killer. I didn't in Turin last year. I have to say, that's given me... pause for thought. I saw a different Yannick Sinner at the ATP Finals in Turin, and I liked it. And look, I love his game. I just find there's not much to get your teeth into. He's
yes, I don't know what you mean. But,
I don't want to lay into the guy.
But I
he's
think
great.
Game-wise,
I've got
I'm
no
into that
active
match.
Negatives to say about him. He
I'm
seems
happy
like
enough
a nice
for the
chap.
Game.
He's you know, yeah. Well, I'm pleased for you. I'm pleased that everybody's excited
and actually,
about that. Look, it will be bigged up here, and that will be exciting. The atmosphere, I think, around that match will be exciting.
His big ball striking against Dimonor scurrying is a combination I like the thought of. I mean, I was just having a quick look, and it's 2-0 head-to-head Sinner, one of those being the next-gen finals, which I don't know how much to put into that. But, you know... I just can imagine the rally construction making for some gasping moments from the crowd, you know?
Yeah, what David said. I am excited for that. I think Sinner's shots are gasp-inducing and Dimonor's movement is gasp-inducing.
And also Dimonor has started that thing where he's trying to be the aggressor in points more now as well, which I like that mindset of him... trying to stop the other guy taking hold of a rally and whether he's able to do it or not.
Okay, so look, I'll be watching and I'll be hoping it's a great match. We've got Taylor Fritz against Stefanos Tsitsipas also in that half
That's
of
good.
The draw. It is good. I'm really excited about this one, actually. And I haven't given that much deep thought to Taylor Fritz. Over the years, I don't know whether you have. You know, I was aware of him quite early. I think I remember following the. I think he was beaten by Shapovalov in. He was in the Shapovalov generation of junior champions. I think the year that Shapovalov won Junior Wimbledon, Taylor Fritz won. The Junior US Open. Tommy Paul had won the Junior French Open that year. And this is Taylor Fritz's first time into the second week of a slam. It has taken him a lot longer than his next-gen cohorts. And I hadn't quite registered that. It's been a bit tougher for him than it has for the others. And he beat Roberto Bautista Agut today, 6-4 in the fifth set.
Rite of passage.
Yes, David, you took the words right out of my mouth. And he was really emotional afterwards. This means something to him. And I went to his press conference, and I've never spoken to Taylor Fritz before. I don't. If I have, then it wasn't memorable, put it that way.
You've both forgotten it.
Yeah.
He loved
it. I'm sure he remembers it really fondly, but I have forgotten it. And I found it to be really engaging and really straightforward and very open. And I asked him whether this felt a long time coming, and he said, hell yeah, pretty much. It has felt a long time coming. He said he never doubted that it would happen, but he really feels like he's had the rough end of some draws over the years. He has.
The players he's lost to in the third round before, I would say only Sonego would be one that you would count as a bad loss. Otherwise, it's been Thiem, Federer, Djokovic. And there's a reason for that, which he went into in some depth, didn't he?
He said something really interesting, actually, about it often being better to be unseeded in a Grand Slam draw than to be one of the seeds 25 through to 32. And he feels it's made a massive difference getting himself out of that bracket and getting his ranking up so that he's seeded in the 17 to 24 bracket, which...
Yes, because...
It makes sense.
Yeah, because seeds 25 to 32 are slated to play seeds 1 to 8 in the third round, whereas seeds 17 to 24 are slated to play 9 to 16.
Mm. It makes a lot of sense to me. And yeah, he really engaged with that question. It was very interesting. He was asked a lot about how he's feeling physically, because it was grueling today. They played in the heat of the day. He's probably going to need a lot of reserves to face Tsitsipas next. And he said, obviously this was, you know, immediately after the match, but he said he felt a lot better than he did after the previous match against Francis Tiafoe. When he cramped right. In fact, he started cramping on match point and he continued cramping after the match. He said he got to the gym and his whole body just went into cramp. But he said that was, I think he gave this great quote. He you know, looked down the barrel and said, nerves are a crazy, crazy thing. And he said, you know, that was down to the fact that it was all tied up in the fact that he was playing Tiafoe, who's a good friend and somebody he really looked up to. That made him a lot more nervous. So he is ready to face Stefanos Tsitsipas. And by stark contrast, Tsitsipas's press conference today was a weird time, David. Matt warned me that his previous press conference was weird and probably not to bother with this one. But I wasn't doing anything else at the time, so I thought, I'll go for the pod. For the pod, I'll go. And my God, it was weird. He sat down in a T-shirt and shorts, and he was literally unable to speak due to how cold and shivering he was. He sort of had lockjaw from the cold. And was sort of stuttering through his answers due to how cold he was and giving some very bizarre answers. And I'm sure he was cold. It's very air-conditioned in there. But I'm sure that Adidas supply him with hoodies. I think he owns hoodies.
And it was all the more perplexing because the reason I told you or warned you about the press conference was that he did the exact same thing in the press conference before. You know, so it's not like this was his first experience of being cold.
No, it was a really, really weird vibe. I asked him how the shoulder was and he said, fine, thanks very much. And I thought it was the sort of slightly defensive answer that you don't give if your shoulder really, elbow really is fine. Thanks very much. But look, he won in four sets today against Benoit Paire. I've got a sneaky feeling about Fritz winning that, you know. You were the early spotter, David, of the fact that Tsitsipas really struggles against big servers. He's had heavy losses here against big servers. He's improved since then, but I still think there's a weakness there. I think a lot depends on how Fritz comes up physically, but I think that'll be a match at the very least.
I think Fritz needs to attack him, and I think he will, because I think that generally is his mindset, and I think that's maybe why he's taken a bit longer to come through. It's not, he's got a couple of ways he can play tennis matches, and I think he's started to package his game more effectively now. I mean, actually, I think if on that returning against attacking players or big servers vibe, if you put Cressy up against Tsitsipas, I would really fear for Tsitsipas in that matchup. I think he would struggle with that.
Maxime Cressy, David, thinks the same. Because Matt and I spoke to Maxime Cressy for the first time today after his third round victory over Australian Chris O'Connell. He's made the second week of a slam for the first time. He's going to face the number two seed, the sort of de facto top seed, Daniil Medvedev. And Matt and I went to his press conference and he is a confident man.
Oh, yes. I had heard other people say that Maxime Cressy has a lot of belief in himself and is confident. But hearing it from Maxime Cressy himself was it took you back, the confidence this guy has.
I felt like I'd been to, I felt like I'd heard a sort of cult leader speak, and the cult was Maxime Cressy. And Matt and I walked down from the press conference together and I was like, well, maybe he's going to beat Medvedev, or maybe he's going to win the title. And, you know, I'd been totally brainwashed into Maxime Cressy land because he spoke that compellingly about the cult of Maxime Cressy. Yeah, well, I mean, look, before we delve too much deeper, we're actually going to play you the audio of Matt and I's encounter with Maxime Cressy. We weren't the only two in the press conference. There was one other Australian journalist and Frank Lamella, a brilliant French journalist from L'Equipe, who asked him some French questions after the grilling he received from Matt and I, from Matt and me, rather. But he faced questions from the Australian journalist first. And one of the questions he was asked about whether he had a kit sponsor, because it didn't look on the court like he was wearing branded kit, and this is what he had to say to that.
Not yet. I wait. I'm patient. I wait until I have a major breakthrough and I have a leverage to negotiate. Especially during the COVID and everything, it's much tougher to have a great deal with a sponsorship. So I prefer really breaking through the top 50, top 10, and then I negotiate, yeah.
Is that where you see yourself going, top 10?
Yeah, even number one, yeah. I'm very confident. I can, my game style can beat anyone. So starting this year, I'm very confident. I played Nadal, and I really believe that it really put him at an uncomfortable position. So if I really stick to my routines and to a very disciplined mindset, I can do it, yeah.
Do you feel extra, obviously, personal pride, but do you feel extra pride having the success, doing it the way that you're doing it with that game style? I mean, people are calling you the guy that's bringing back serve and volley.
Yeah, yeah. My vision from the very beginning was to bring serve and volley back. I've had many people tell me that it's dead, it's not going to be efficient or effective today, and the courts are slower, the returns, there's better returners today. I've heard many excuses that serve and volley was not going to be the best game style for me, but I had a vision to bring it back, and I believe it's gonna happen, yeah.
Can I ask about the notebook that you have at the change of ends? What sort of stuff?
Yeah, it's one of my routines to be in the present. It's in those kind of conditions with the crowd and everything. It's, the mind can wander really easily, and the notebook is a way for me to be in a tunnel and not be distracted by anything. Yeah.
Is it mental stuff?
Yes, mindset. There? Yeah, mental routine to stay in the present and not be distracted by other thoughts from the past or the future, related with winning or losing, to stay in the present, very effective. Yeah.
You said that you've had people tell you and doubt serve and volley. Have you ever doubted it yourself when you were in college, for example?
Yeah, my vision on the Pro Tour started my junior year of college. I wasn't thinking about being a professional tennis player before. My vision was more to become number one of my school at UCLA. And then I realized that improvements were really quick. And my junior year, I realized I could have a professional career too. So, I did have many doubts, of course. The most important is that I kept going and, stayed determined. And now the doubts completely are gone. Yeah. No more doubts.
You're playing the top seed remaining in the next round. I'd imagine that will be either on Rod Laver, possibly the second court. You strike me as someone that will enjoy that big stage. Would that be right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I love playing on any court, whether it's court 15 or the Rod Laver. I don't isolate a specific event, but I'm very excited to play him, and I believe it's going to be a very disruptive game against him. Yeah.
Very disruptive game is just a brilliant line to end on, isn't it? He referenced his vision twice there. Do you see what I mean by sort of cult leader vibes?
Oh, it's incredible.
I first had my vision in the second year of college. It's quite something, isn't it?
I mean, he sounds staggeringly naive to me. And yet at the same time, I love it because I don't, although it sounds naive because, you know, let's wait and see. You've had a couple of stuffings, mate, by somebody. Let's see how you're talking then. He doesn't sound like he's about to get affected by that. And because, frankly, I've seen him get one from Dan Evans, which is quite interesting. And quite interesting as well that he talked about how he thinks his game is going to disrupt Medvedev. I remember Dan Evans trying to disrupt Daniel Medvedev and coming up very, very short against that sort of metronomic kind of game. But I do think Chris's game is so big and so relentless, and he believes in it. You can hear how much he believes in it. It's going to be a nightmare for people.
Yeah, I mean, interesting the stuffings thing. I mean, he's so positive about his game that he takes confidence from losses. He, in the French portion of his press conference, he talked a lot about a straight sets defeat he took against Stefanos Tsitsipas at the 2020 US Open, which was on the Arthur Ashe Stadium, which I have to say I don't remember myself. Mm. In fact, to the extent that I asked him whether Rod Laver Arena would be the biggest stadium he'd played on, he said, no, I've played on Arthur Ashe. I don't remember that. But yeah, he lost 7-6, 6-3, 6-4. But he talked a lot about that day giving him belief. You know, that was... he had only just turned pro, I think, at that stage. And, you know, he was competitive against Stefanos Tsitsipas. And he came away from that and you know, thought, yep, I can challenge the top guys. So, you know, I think on one hand, I thought... It was bizarre, you know, seeing this 24-year-old guy talking like the, as you say, David, this sort of really young, naive, sort of wide-eyed, I can do anything I want to do, almost like, what do you want to be when you grow up? But on the other hand, he's only been pro less than 2 years, and he looks older than he is. So sort of imagine one of the next Jenners 4 years ago saying stuff like that, and it wouldn't have seemed, I don't think, quite so jarring. I don't know. I mean, look, I'm not saying he's going to be a world number one, but I kind of loved it.
Would you like to hear what Medvedev had to say
about
the prospect of facing him? He said, I heard he serves pretty well. If you don't have a good serve...
So he's never seen him play.
If you don't have a good serve, probably you won't serve and volley, and it's not going to be effective. And the transcript says that he said that while smiling, which is quite ominous on the transcript. And then he says, I do think it's possible to be a top player like this, serve and volleying. No matter what you do, slice, serve and volley, or return, if you want to be at the top, you need to make it almost perfect because other guys will try to break you and your style. Which, again, sounds quite threatening and as a sort of warning. And actually, something Cressy stressed in the English portion of the press conference and again in French is that he doesn't worry about his opponent. You know, he's purely focused on himself and what he's doing. And no matter whether the opponent is returning on the baseline or behind the baseline, it says it doesn't really matter to him. He's still going to come in. He's still going to do his thing. I think that's quite interesting because when he comes up against Medvedev is a guy who I think does take into account what the opponent is doing and does change his style accordingly and does hone in on weaknesses that he spots in an opponent. Obviously, he's focused on his own game as well, but he's very aware of both ends of the court, Medvedev. I think that's sort of why he's really got to where he is. His sort of tennis intellect is so high. And I think focusing on yourself can take you so far, but that did slightly worry me, the sort of total lack of concern for anyone else. Like, he could trouble Medvedev. He could also think, oh, my God, Medvedev's good. Like,
I think that could be the outcome. I think Medvedev's hands and ability on the full stretch to manipulate the ball and get it past people that are attacking him is extraordinary, really. And I haven't seen him against a fully fledged serve and volley like this, but I think I know Cressy was injured a little bit, or his body was hurting when he played Evans, but he was made to look quite cumbersome by Evans's hands and ability to lob and put it at his feet and all that sort of stuff. And look, I'm all in on Maxi and Cressy, as you know, because I'm just so happy to see somebody taking on serve and volley like this and with a big game and all the rest of it. And by the way, just mental strength-wise, he was in a bear pit of an atmosphere with O'Connell today, the Australian, who, you know, he'd got people smacking the sort of the advertising hoardings and making a right old noise. And he just rode the waves of that match. He refused to get wound up by any of it, even though he was getting time violations. He's got a great mental approach to the sport. I loved that question about the little book and the way he handles himself. But, you know, rattling Medvedev? I don't know.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I think Medvedev's winning that match. Just in the moment, I felt a little like I'd been hypnotised.
It's fascinating. I love hearing somebody talk like that. It's so different, isn't it?
Yeah. And I can't wait for the match. It feels to me like one that even if it's a straight sets win for Medvedev will be fun somehow.
This will
and
be
interesting.
Fun. I agree with you.
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So what about the women's tennis that we saw today? Well, in upset news, the bookies had Markéta Vondroušová as the favourite against the number two seed, Aryna Sabalenka. So I suppose Sabalenka's three-set win, 4-6, 6-3, 6-1, counts as an upset, or does it count as the bookies are silly? I don't know. But anyway, a pretty remarkable win from Aryna Sabalenka. It's pretty remarkable what Aryna Sabalenka is doing full stop at this tournament, really. I mean, she served, I think, 10 double faults today, Matt, which is quite a lot of double faults. And usually your whole game is built around your serve, isn't it? If the serve isn't there, it causes you to lose faith in all the rest of your game. It literally shakes the foundations, doesn't it? But somehow she's containing the service yips to just her serve. She's sort of hermetically sealed her serve from the rest of her game somehow. And it's really quite incredible, Matt.
I'm all in on Sabalenka this tournament. I think it's one of the most interesting stories at this event. And look, we saw her break down in tears on the court just at the start of the season when she was hitting a lot of double faults. And at the end of the match today, she joked about the number of double faults she hit. There has been a progression in the way she is viewing the double faults, even within the last couple of weeks, which is kind of extraordinary in itself. And I think you need to have the attitude she's got now in order to be able to overcome it. As you said, the way she is able to isolate it and manage it is incredible because, frankly, the rest of her game looks in really good shape. That's the cleanest, best I've seen Sabalenka play in quite a while, I would say. It's certainly the second and third set today. I went out onto the court to watch them, and I thought she played really, really well. And the 10 double faults she hit, it's a lot. Of course, it's a lot. But six of them were in the first set, which she lost. And two of them sort of came back-to-back in the third set. The rest of the time, the serve was actually not a huge issue for her. It's obviously caused her problems in the first set and it's contributed to her losing that set. So it is a problem. But she got it under control. She managed it. And as I said, the rest of her game was contained. And she is now winning tight matches in slams, which used to be something she never really did. If she wasn't, you know, if she wasn't blasting opponents off the court, she wasn't winning. It was a real Achilles heel for her. And this tournament, she's done it three times in a row. It's sort of become a little trademark for her. And yeah, I thought I was so impressed. And then I went to her press conference and she took the energy that she displayed in that on-court interview, sort of joking and giggling about her game. She took it into the press conference where she was followed in by the Netflix cameras. And I mean, she just couldn't stop laughing about the whole thing. And she was really struggling to sort of keep a straight face at the start of the press conference. And at one point she sort of turned to the cameras and smiled at them as well. And she's sort of seeing it all as, I think, that side of things. She's taking it very seriously, but she's also sort of embracing it as well. And yeah, she's a fascinating story, this tournament, Sabalenka, what she's doing, how she's doing it. And I should say, full Sabalenka exchange / grilling on the serve to be found in the newsletter.
Link is, the details of how to subscribe to that are in our show notes. She'll face Kai Kanepi next, who beat Aussie wildcard Maddie Inglis 2-6, 6-2, 6-love. Kanepi, of course, into the fourth round of a slam with off the back of absolutely no form whatsoever. So that'll be an interesting one. For the next portion of the podcast, you're not going to be hearing much from me because we'll be covering matches that took place while I was asleep. We're recording this podcast a little earlier than we recorded last night in order to try and get my body clock into some semblance of a healthy place, because I woke up at 2:45 p.m. today, folks, and that is what happens when I don't set an alarm. And full disclosure, I only woke up because I heard you leaving the house, Matt. I don't know what would have happened.
I did it so quietly. Yeah,
I know.
Well,
I mean, who knows? I might still be asleep now. Went to sleep at about 4 a.m. thinking, well, there's no need to set an alarm. You know, I'll get as much sleep as my body will allow me. 2:45 p.m.
Well, we woke up at similar times, Catherine. It's we just did. That I was we 11 did. Hours difference time zone wise.
I will, no matter what hour of the day I go to sleep, I will be setting an alarm from now on. So I managed to sleep through what might have been the match of the day, actually. Danielle Collins beating Clara Towson. Please tell me what happened.
Well, I think it was the match of the day. It was great. They split the first two sets. I actually think they each won the set that the other probably should have won. Towson was down in the first set and reeled off five straight games, I think, to win it. And then was really in control and looked very smooth. It was the first. I mean, I've not watched a lot of Towson. I've seen her play before, but this was really striking to me how poised she is on the court and composed and doesn't get flustered. And she was really in control of this match. Then up a break in the second set, which is why I think, you know, she probably should have won the second set. And Collins did what Collins does and dug in and fought and made it a match and stole the second set, really. And then the third set was close all the way. I thought Collins was the better player throughout. But they, you know, there weren't the breaks of serve that there were in the first two sets. And then it all just sort of reached this amazing crescendo where Collins set up a couple of match points with the most stunning forehand passing shot, just right onto the baseline at full stretch. It was brilliant. And then Towson just responded with a brilliant point of her own to save match point, so composed, big backhand down the line. And yeah, there was just this contrast in styles in terms of, you know, you've got animated versus unanimated, loud versus quiet, and yet they were both hitting big from the baseline. It was a sort of personality contrast, but game-wise, you know, it was kind of similar. And then to win it, you just felt like someone was going to have to come up with something brilliant because they were both playing well. And it's exactly what Collins did, two backhand return winners to clinch the match, one down the line, one cross court at a sort of impossible angle. I don't think she thought it was in because, you know, it was such an acute angle she'd found on the return. And yeah, it was a great, great match and battle and heck of a win for Danielle Collins. You know,
she's such a competitor, isn't she? And she plays so well in the heat. She's from Florida, isn't she? She's a former semi-finalist here, and she went straight out after that grueling singles match and played doubles almost straight away. And she won with partner Desiree Kravchuk. She's got Elise Mertens next, does Danielle Collins. So I think they're both former semi-finalists here. So one of them will be back in the quarters. We've also got Simona Halep facing Elise Cornet in a throwback match in the fourth round. That'll be on Monday. Elise Cornet backing up her big Muguruza upset, beating Zidanshek, Tamara Zidanshek, 4-6, 6-4, 6-2. And Halep just cruised 6-2, 6-1. Against Danka Kovanec over on the John Cain Arena. She's in such a good place, Simona Halep, isn't she? And Matt talked me out of going big on her in my predictions. You just did I saw that frown. You did. And David's got her in the final.
Yep.
Mm. Anyway. Lurking in her half of the draw.
I don't know why I get blamed for all of Catherine's predictions failures. I've got my own predictions failures to worry about.
Matt went big on Roberto Bautista Agut. So Iga Swiatek she's through to the fourth round, as she sort of always is now. She's made the second week of every slam since she won that Roland Garros 2020 title, which I think is really quite something, that consistency. That's, of
yeah.
From winning a Grand Slam kind of out of nowhere, you expect a lot of ups and downs. Look, she's had relative ups and downs, but that Grand Slam consistency is really noteworthy, I think. And it was tough tonight against Daria Kazatkina. It was a straight sets win, but a lot trickier than the scoreline suggested. And I think Kazatkina's beefed up her game, and I hope she is more of a factor this year than she's been in the last few years. But yeah, so much credit to Swiatek.
Yeah, I watched some of it, and looking at the scoreline and then hearing from people who said exactly what you did, Catherine, which is that it was a much more of a challenge for Swiatek than it sounds. 6-3, 6-2 doesn't sound like much, does it really? But, you know, sometimes these matches can be like that. Like I said about Evans and Ogier Yassim, a lot closer than it sounds. But I think that Świątek, she's just a bigger version in terms of game heft than Kasatkina is. She's got the variety. She can handle the opponent's variety. She sort of dissected what Kasatkina does to people, figured that out, and then took over. And I agree. I think that record, it's sort of without highlights, really, isn't it, since the French Open when she won? But it's always base level. She's given herself, this is what I am, minimum now. And she keeps producing that minimum. But I don't think it'll be too long before we get another highlight moment, really.
Well, she's got Saronika Steyr in the fourth round, so she'll be the heavy favourite there, quite frankly. Yeah. What about tomorrow's schedule then? We start on the Rod Laver Arena with Madison Keys against Paola Badosa. It's going to be hot tomorrow, folks. So, you know, that could be a factor in these day session matches. And should be said, as I read this out, the women are always being scheduled first on the show courts, back-to-back first on the show courts. I'm just getting a bit bored of it. Anyway, Keys against Badosa, followed by Krejcikova against Azarenka. Then it's Adrian Marino against Rafael Nadal. I mean, that's his perfect place, isn't it? Nadal playing third on the day session.
Can I now say my Manorino trivia, which I forgot to say yesterday when we had a whole segment on Adrian Manorino? This feels like the time because Nadal's probably going to win. So here it is. Manorino doesn't like to know his opponent until the final possible moment. You know, he's quite happy learning about it 15 minutes before he steps on court, which I find totally bizarre.
That's very Maxine Cressy, isn't it? I'm just going to go out there and be Adrian Manorino no matter what's happening on the other side of the net.
Yeah, maybe Maxine Cressy needs to think, do I want to be Adrian Manorino?
Manorino beat Aslan Karatsev last night. He outlasted the Lion.
So might he not know right now?
I mean, entirely possible.
Well,
although because he was on a show court,
impossible.
Because he was on a show court last night, I think he would have been asked.
But he did an awkward interview. Yeah. I don't remember it coming up. But
the one where I found this out, and this was put on Twitter by the French journalist from L'Equipe, Quentin Moinet. It was after he'd beaten Hubert Hurkacz, where Manorino said this, and I think this has long been known in the French press. You know, it wasn't a surprise to Quentin, but you know, he didn't know, for example, he was playing Hurkacz just before he went
He's
on court.
Rocked up, knocked out a member of the top 10, didn't even notice who it was.
Movement? What movement?
So, Nadal and Manorino, third in the day session. Night session on Laver is Ash Barty against Amanda Anisimova, followed by Pablo Carreño Busta taking on Matteo Berrettini. Interesting one, that. I thought they might have put Zverev against Shapovalov on the Rod Laver Arena. But the schedule changes a bit from tomorrow, because on the second court, the singles kicks off not before 1 p.m. With Jessica Pegula against Maria Sakkari, a repeat of their extraordinary match in Miami last year. And that's followed by not before 3 p.m. Zverev against Shapovalov, which could be an absolute corker. And you've got singles on the John Cain Arena, not before 6:30 p.m. with Mirma Kecmanovic against Gael Monfils. Dylan Alcott's in action tomorrow. He is just such a big deal here in Australia. It's brilliant. He's playing. He's on murals, on street corners, he's on the telly, he's everywhere, and he's a big deal, and it's great. He's in action in the quad wheelchair quarterfinals tomorrow. Kokkinakis and Kyrgios are blasting through the men's doubles draw. They knocked out the top seeds, Mektic Pavic, yesterday, and apparently there was a bust up in the gym afterwards. So good luck to Behar and Escobar, who are their victims tomorrow. They're on the Kia Arena. Dida de Groot is in action in the women's wheelchair singles quarterfinals. So it's all happening tomorrow. But it is, you know, it's the day that suddenly there's so few singles matches happening. Suddenly there's, you know, sometimes there'll be only one happening at a time. So Matt's sort of reliance on the interactive screen diminishes a bit from tomorrow.
He can get out and about and join you on the Not Henman Hill, whatever it is. By the way, the...
Got savaged by mosquitoes out there, David.
Ooh, no, I don't like that. The Shapovalov-Zverev match, it is very interesting, isn't it? I think the head-to-head's 4-2 Zverev, but they've played a couple of ATP Cups, 1-1 apiece. Just a word I feel like I need to say about Shapovalov and Ogier Aliassim. I give them quite a hard time. I have over the last couple of years. Often feel like they haven't quite lived up to what I thought they would. So, and it's very much so far. They're still very young blokes. They're still in this draw. And I think neither one of them has played that well. I think Ogier Aliassim played well today in the end. But I like the fact that they're persevering and they're getting through even though they're not playing very well. And maybe that's... maybe that's a stride for them both. You know, even though neither one of them is lighting it up and highlight reel and all the rest of it, but they're getting themselves through these... what was it? Shapovalov was 3 tie breaks before he eventually started to get his way a couple of rounds ago. And then he had a good win yesterday against Riley Opelka. Just interested to see whether this is maybe a moment for them both. They won that ATP Cup together. You know, it didn't get massive headlines, but... maybe they're getting somewhere now.
Could be. Could be, definitely. I'm interested to see that matchup tomorrow, that's for sure. I think that's it for our Day 6 Australian Open podcast. I will point you in the direction of our Instagram where there is excellent Charlie, our Australian Open mascot, content. I did what the kids call a photo dump today. Of some delightful Charlie content, and there's Matherin content as well, which is what Hannah calls me and Matt while we're on our expeditions. And there's the occasional bit of David and Solihull content as well.
Looking down,
looking down in the dumps in the depths of the night, but it certainly tells the story. So Charlie is our Australian Open mascot. I scored some points for Carter today. We're on a roll, Carter. That's 2 in a row. David and Darwin scored points today,
yes,
I think.
Yes, Arena Sabalenka.
The big Sabalenka upset, which I think is an exploitation of a quirk in the...
It certainly is if you consider that I was going to choose Vondroušová until I found out she was the favourite, and then I decided to choose Sabalenka because
he's gaming it, folks. He's gaming it. Anyway, lucky you, Darwin. Matt and Gerald the Cat, not going so well. Not going so well. Anyway, Billie Jean, there's Billie Jean content on our Instagram as well, not to be missed. She's sponsored by Billie Jean King and Ilana Kloss. We have our executive producers, Kyle Weingartner and Chris Albert Lee, top blokes, both of them. And we have shout-outs, Matt.
We do. We have some good shout-outs. Not that they're not always good, but...
good rescue.
Each one has something interesting, I would say. First is Skip Schwartzman.
Hello.
From Philadelphia.
Like Skippy, the bush kangaroo.
I've met Skip, would you believe? Yeah. Is this Skip?
Person who's in your house sometimes?
Yes.
No.
Is she living in your house?
Skip has been a long-term listener of the Tennis Podcast and has frequently got in touch. And yeah, he said hello one time at one of the tournaments. And a very nice chap he is too.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, that's excellent. We also have...
thank you, Skip.
Scott Fleming from Arbroath in Scotland,
like Peter Fleming.
He says, same height as David Law himself.
Oh,
wow.
Good on you, Scott.
And a Tennessee name, like Peter Fleming.
Yeah.
And Colin Fleming.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Scott. I was going to say thank you, Peter, then. It's not Peter Fleming. Thank you, Scott Fleming. I don't think Peter Fleming listens to the podcast. Hello, Peter, if you do.
Of course
but
he
mostly,
does.
Mostly hello, Scott, and thank you.
And the last one is Catherine Dina, and she says, and I love this, I live just outside Stratford-on-Avon near David. I grew up in Reading, brackets Catherine, exclamation mark, and I went to uni in Durham.
Oh, Matt. The full house, the Holy Trinity.
Mm,
and marvellous. She's called Catherine. Can I inquire about the spelling?
That's the one bit you're not going to like. So let's focus on the other bit.
Is she it can a work Y? On it.
It's a K and a Y.
A K and a Y.
No, okay. We embrace all Catherines.
They're very hipster, the K's and the Y's.
You can get your name changed anyway, can't you? Anyway,
I embrace all Catherines, all of them. Thank you very, very much, Catherine. I appreciate it. We all do. That's it, I think, folks. Subscribe to the newsletter, tell your friends, do all the things. Become a friend of the pod if you'd like to. It's well worth it, I promise you. And it has made it possible for Matherin to be in Australia.
Can
we say that?
I don't know. It's too big an edit to get rid of it now. Look, we'll be back tomorrow with more daily Australian Open content. We'll speak to you then.
Bye, Matherin.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.